We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling. On the corner.
Pelé leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change Freddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure.
New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcast.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man, Andreas Hale. And this show, the entire show, is all about NXT TakeOver War Games because we just finished watching it, so nothing better than having an immediate reaction to that show. If you guys tune in for the hip-hop talk and all the craziness we usually talk about, we apologize. This is all wrestling tonight. I'd say check around Tuesday or Wednesday. On our boxing show, we'll dive right back into it. Talk music, talk boxing. Mayweather announced a fight. We're going to talk about the Errol Spence fight and the fights coming up later in the week. So make sure you guys check out that show. But like I said, this is about NXT TakeOver and what Ryan McKinnell deemed the best TakeOver he's seen in recent memory. So yes, it got the Big Mac cosign. We're giving it its own show. So Dre, first and foremost, overall rating for the show, before we break it down little by little, what is your overall takeaway on the hot seat right now, immediate reaction? What's your grade?
B+.
Yeah. That's not bad. Not bad.
B+. It was a good show.
A-.
Yeah, it was a B+. It was a notch below it because of some weird like storytelling decisions, but overall, it was a good show. Like, NXT doesn't have bad takeovers. It just doesn't happen.
Yep.
But the days of every show having at least like one 4.5 to 5-star match, those are behind us for the time being. But this was still very good.
Agreed. So I'll give it an A-. I think that's where I left off on the last show as well. Going back, I still remember the last show as being a little bit better. But I'll settle on this one for an A-. Only one match really dropped the letter grade for me from an A to an A-, and we'll get into that. But I, again, like you said, takeovers deliver. It's just what they do. They don't miss on these takeover pay-per-views. Everything in between, they have to start shoring up. But I feel like they left enough cliffhangers in this takeover to be interested to see where we're going forward.
I didn't see any. You saw cliffhangers?
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in play after this takeover. Not cliffhanger, but you know, like, we got to see how it turns out. Because there's a lot of pieces where we thought it was going this way, but now it looks like it's going that way. Are they going to do this immediate? Is it going to be long-term booking for some of the people? We got to see how everyone fits in after this takeover. So there's enough there. There's a guy like Kushida who wasn't even involved today. Where does he fit in?
See, that's not a cliffhanger. That's just an omission.
No, that's an omission. But I'm saying there's stuff that is intriguing. It can't be a cliffhanger. He wasn't involved. But there's stuff intriguing going forward. Like, is he the guy for Finn Balor going forward? Is that why he wasn't on this? Because Finn Balor is just coming back from the broken jaw. We find that out on Wednesday because Balor cut the promo. Tune in Wednesday to see the prince is back. Maybe Kushida comes out and fucks him up. That is a cliffhanger. So there's these little things we really get answered going forward. And there was a lot of that in this pay-per-view. So much like the AEW show, the Winter is Coming show, I thought they left enough intrigue to be like, oh shit, okay, cool. I got to tune in next week and make me want a little bit more. So I think that was well done in today's show. But we can go match by match to go through and give our thoughts on all of this. First match, women's War Games match. Candice LeRae, captain of her team with Dakota Kai, Raquel Gonzalez, and Toni Storm versus Team Shotzi Blackheart, Ember Moon, Rhea Ripley, and Io Shirai. It's easy to say these are the best eight women in NXT right now. So they sure piled their top eight into one match. That's always smart. And I think everyone showed out. When we go through the match, I like the placement of Dakota Kai going in first. Ember Moon went in first. She got her stuff off. Their opening sequence was great. Athletic moves. Ember Moon did like some crazy, you know, handspring front flip into an elbow. They were really showing out their athleticism, bringing their story to the pay-per-view, which I thought was one that was built up a lot lately. And then as everyone's getting their numbers called, I thought it really made sense how everyone entered, and it was entertaining throughout. I didn't think this match really had too many lulls where you're like, yo, this is boring.
So, see, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. It wasn't a bad match. Like, these women worked their ass off. My problem was how we got here and the structure of the match. Like, I can't fault any of the eight women that were in this match because they all worked their ass off. The build towards this War Games was stupid. Having EO come in at the last minute was dumb. And I didn't understand that. The other thing that bothered me a lot about this match was the babyfaces having the advantage and still losing clean as a sheet. And the commentary just couldn't wrap their head around the advantage. Like, they, between Beth, Vic, and Wade, the way they handled this wasn't very smart. And it doesn't make sense. Like, when the baby faces have the advantage, it makes for a really strange dynamic. And they tried to offset it with Io coming in last and Raquel Gonzalez and Toni Storm trying to keep her out. But it just felt really goofy to do that. They could have flipped it. I'm not saying you should do it all the time, but I'm just saying, like, sometimes when the heels have the advantage, it feels like the women are working from under the baby faces, and it makes more sense. This was really poor. Like, that part was strange to me. And then all of this to get to the finish where Raquel Gonzalez pins Io Shirai clean, I didn't feel like we needed a War Games to get there. That being said, these women worked their asses off. It's like they were given a match that I didn't think anybody necessarily needed. It was being shoehorned into a War Games themed pay-per-view, and they worked with what they had, and they busted their ass. But the story hurt for me, because I was like, this is kind of dumb how we're getting here. But I can't, like, Ember Moon, the Eclipse on the Chair, like, she's impressive. She's, like, really, really good. Dakota Kai opening showed up. There were a couple of weird spots in this match. There was a spot towards the end where they were trying to set up to break up a pinfall, and everybody was trying to figure out where they needed to be. And you could tell that Rhea Ripley had no idea where she needed to be. She was like looking around to find where she needed to stand to make sure Toni Storm pushed her to break up the pin. Yeah. And it was a weird spot. But overall, it was a good match. The strange thing to me also is Rhea Ripley almost felt like the weak spot in this match. Not like she was bad, but she felt like an afterthought. It felt like a lot of this centered around Dakota, Ember, Candice being the mastermind, Shotzi just being amazing. Every time she gets in the ring, it's something special. Toni also kind of felt like she got lost in the shuffle a bit. But
I mean, Toni took the Eclipse. That was just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you eating it, that's one thing. But I'm just saying, in terms of, like, Dakota, I don't know. Dakota and Ember had a great opening segment. But I felt like it should have been Ember and Toni because of what just happened.
Yeah.
That's why I said, like, the structure of this match was strange. But, I mean, all in all, it was a good match. I just hated, like, there's just small things that just annoyed me about how we got here. And then I'll say, like, Raquel Gonzalez getting the pin on Io Shirai kind of came out of nowhere, but then when you think about it, Io's beaten basically everybody in that ring, so she needs a new contender, which also makes me wonder, it seems like we're about to get this belt off of Io soon, because she's run out of opponents.
I don't think Raquel Gonzalez is the one to take it off of her, though. If she does, that's the ultimate, like, Diesel getting the belt move. Granted, the guys pulling the triggers are in the click, so don't put it past them. But it feels like she's Diesel to Dakota Kai, Shawn Michaels. Not that Dakota Kai is that, you know, level of athlete, but in terms of if one of them had to grab the belt, you would think it'd be Dakota, but somehow you put it on the giant first. It makes no sense to me. I don't think she's that big of a threat. I think she's the next person to challenge. And then you get whoever takes the belt off of Io, if it has to come off, Mania weekend.
Well, see, this is why I say this. I think what NXT is realizing is that Shotzi is much better than they initially thought. They brought her in and they were like, all right, cool. They gave her the little tank. But then she's done so many great things since then. You talk about the match that she had with Io, which was excellent. You talk about her hosting Halloween Havoc. What she did in this particular match. And now I feel like the way they're playing it, her entrance tonight with a new tank, I feel like they're looking at this at how do we get this title on Shotzi? You got to get it off of Io first. It's the only way to do it. I'm not necessarily saying Raquel Gonzalez gets it off her, but it's very possible. Because if it's not Raquel Gonzalez, then who's left? Toni Storm?
Yeah, Toni Storm is the next natural heel to get it. And which, if you play that into Royal Rumble weekend, you can make the switch to Toni Storm as a heel. But I still think you build Toni. Maybe she even has to go over on Ember to end that. And then you build Toni to face Io Shirai. To me, that gives you the best match as well. Like, that gives you a chance for a 4-star match at a TakeOver Mania weekend. Because Toni Storm could work her ass off.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like...
Triple threat with Shotzi? Do you protect Io? Do you go into a triple threat with Toni and Shotzi? Like,
I don't know. This is really weird. It's all because, to me, the mistake that NXT made was making Io a total babyface. I feel like it would have been much better if she just was everybody chased her and she wasn't involved in this War Games match. Because Ember should be chasing her. Toni should be chasing her. Shotzi should be chasing her. But now she's like super babyface EO, and it kind of takes, like, she's so good at being a heel that they turned to babyface. It was the same thing with Asuka. She was so good at being a heel they had to flip her to babyface. But then it limits your options. And her being in this War Games match, I still didn't like. Even though I love, like, the trash can spot, because I thought it was so goofy. And then Dakota Kai's stomp on the trash can. I felt like Io was stuck in that damn thing. That was crazy. It felt like an unnecessary bump, but alas, here we are. But I feel like NXT could have done a better job with Io as this neutral, like, fuck all of you, I'm taking on all comers. And then the options would have opened up. Because Raquel Gonzalez getting a shot, I don't know if she takes the title off her, but they've been heating her up, if you paid attention over the past like 3 to 4 weeks. They've been heating her up. Strangely enough, as much as they've been heating her up, I never felt like they closed a chapter on her and Rhea Ripley.
No. And it didn't close in this War Games. It's not like she had a big spot against Rhea. Like, it was just,
it was
like,
weird. They stared each other down, and then like so they had like some fists in the middle of the in between the two rings.
Well,
that
I
was cool.
Rhea beat her at Halloween Havoc, I guess.
Right. Yeah, that's what makes this feel weird. Like, Rhea beat her, but Raquel's getting the next title shot. But I felt like there's unfinished business. I don't know. This is what War Games does. It annoys me because I watch War Games. There's two things about War Games that annoys me. One is there's a spot that always happens right around the third person getting in the ring where I get bored. It always happens. It feels like they're just kind of, we got to wait because nothing can happen. It's almost like in the Iron Man match where in between minutes like 20 and 40, it's just like, all right, what are we doing? It's just, we're just doing things to kill time until we get everybody in the ring. Then the match begins and then they had a great finish. But in between that, I can't remember anything from whoever entered in third or fourth until EO finally got in. I can't remember anything.
It's a bunch of just, okay, us two beat up on this one, and then the other one comes in for a second, and then us three beat up on these two. So, I mean, in the middle of that, Dakota Kai really had her run, and Toni Storm locked the gate, and they're really beating the hell out of the baby faces.
They
killed time doing that.
They killed time. And I guess the last thing.
It's killing time, though. I mean, that's what the match is.
But that's what's, it's weird to me when you do that, because I don't mind it if, what, again, this is like WWE
shit. They need to shorten the clock on War Games. It's long.
Yeah, because WWE is, they just have this problem now with like taking matches that should culminate and end feuds and just like sticking them in there to try to build things out of it. And War Games is a match where back in, I think it was 89, WCW 88, the first War Games with the Horsemen against Dusty and them, that was like a blood feud, and it had to end in a War Games match because it was just everybody had to deal with the Horsemen, and Dusty had to get his crew together to fuck them up, and there was blood and it was brutal and it felt right. This didn't feel like it needed to be a War Games match. This just felt like a match. Like when back then, and I'll even go back to when I think it was the Horsemen against the Horsemen, James and J.J. Dillon, because I remember Hawk just cranked his neck, something serious, and they separated his shoulder in that match. And whenever there was an advantage, there was a lot of heat because you knew what that feud was all about. Like, these factions were beefing. Everybody hated the Horsemen. This wasn't factions. This was just a bunch of women thrown into a match. So I felt like those middle spots, they were dry because there was no real heat. They weren't really working the angles on the story. Again, that being said, this is not the women's fault because they busted their ass in this match. So it's a good match. It was a good opener, really good opener. People loved it. I get it. It's just the small like story elements that bothered the hell out of me.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, but they were clunky to start out with. So we couldn't assume it was going to change, right? They did the best they could with the cards given to them.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they waited so long to build this, because a lot of these feuds have been going on for almost 2 months.
Right, why, and you know you got War weeks. Games.
Yeah, why wait 2 weeks before? We had a podcast a month ago where I was like, yo, there's like 5 women's feuds right now. It's probably setting up to War Games. You were like, man, I hope not. And you were like, I hope it's just a singles match. I was like, I think it's setting up to War Games. Then they didn't do it. And then I was like, oh, shit, I guess I was wrong. And then a week before War Games, they're like, by the way. And I'm like, you could have did this a month ago.
Right.
It makes no sense. But yeah, I mean, they did the best with what they could. A lot of, I don't know, it was fun. It was a fun match. And we'll see what Raquel Gonzalez has, because now it's that weird position where NXT does this a lot. And I'm not sure I like it. But they push their monster heels into this situation. And they give them time, unlike the main roster. But when they get there, I feel like they're still not ready. They did it with Corbin, and then you get stuck in limbo. They did it with Nia Jax twice. lost both, gets stuck in limbo. Lars Sullivan got that push for a second, stuck in limbo. I can't remember a monster heel where it worked and they like got the title.
Right.
And did anything meaningful, right? Like, it's just, you go, they build you up, you're great, you lose, and you're stuck until the main roster calls you up because Vince loves size. And yeah. Then, listen, figure out what the fuck you got to do up there. Lars Sullivan crashed and burned. Corbin has been an upper mid-card guy for 4 years. So once you get up there, figure it out. Nia Jax, like, yeah, she's a tag team champion. She puts, you know, Lana through a table every week. She kind of figured it out. Like, but in NXT, it was just like, yeah, thanks for building up our champion that can actually wrestle. Now get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
So it's weird. That's one of the things NXT does not do well. They do not build monster heels. The best thing for Braun Strowman is that he never stayed in NXT. NXT might have ruined him because they don't do it well. It's weird, but I feel like Triple H loves the Shawn Michaels of the world, right? He can take Gargano and make him a star. He can boost Adam Cole to the world. He can make Finn Balor fit and work. He doesn't know how to make the big guys work. They don't latch on. He can't do that, and that's his shortcoming. He needs to find someone who can, though. Punish Martinez is close, but I feel like Punishment Law, we'll talk about that match, but Punishment could be the next guy to get lost in that shuffle. Donovan Dijak, lost in the shuffle. Fuck, Keith Lee, he's not even like a monster heel. He does flippy shit.
Nah, it saved him. Face.
Yeah, saved him.
Like, they tried it with Baron Corbin, when Baron would have those matches and be like 10 seconds, right? They tried it with Baron. And then they realize, well, Baron's not really that great of a worker. And then all of a sudden, he's become a much better worker. And then they just kind of overexposed him. Then they tried it with Lars Sullivan. And yeah, just where the fuck is Lars Sullivan anyway?
I don't know. They tried pushing him in a different character like 3 weeks ago on SmackDown. And they were like, nah, this guy fucking sucks.
they keep trying, right? Like, but so NXT is just, they have had this issue with the monsters. And now Raquel Gonzalez is being pushed as like a monster heel. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, let's move on.
Yeah. But there you go. A criticism of NXT. I just want to point that out, by the way, that I can be objective in my criticisms. It's not just towards AEW.
Yeah. Move on.
Next match, Tommaso Ciampa versus Timothy Thatcher. I didn't dislike this match, right? It was hard-hitting. It was stiff. It's what we thought we were getting from them. I don't think I needed 16 minutes and 45 seconds of this match. It reached a point where I was like, either you hit the second and third gear or you get the hell out of here. And that was around the eight-minute mark. And then they gave us another 8 minutes of first gear. And I was just like, okay, there's a little blood on the ear. There's still like, it never hit that second gear, and it didn't need to be 17 minutes, in my opinion.
Yeah, Ciampa goes over. This one, I saw a lot of people give it praise, and you guys know, like, I like my hard-hitting matches. But I felt like it was like a very grapple-heavy match, which I don't necessarily mind, because I love how Zack Sabre Jr. does it. I love what Thatcher used to do in, like, Evolve. Something about this didn't click for me because early on I was just fucking bored, and then by that final stretch I was like, all right, it's like we're getting somewhere, and then it kind of ended and I was like, it made me think, and I thought about this a lot. Ciampa needs Gargano. Gargano doesn't need Ciampa. Ciampa on his own isn't nearly as good.
He was hot off of injuries.
But he was always involved with Gargano.
Yeah, the Adam Cole match was good, though.
Now, how much do you give credit to Adam Cole? Because Cole can clearly wrestle anybody versus Ciampa. True.
But Ciampa's, you know, Goldie's coming home, all that shit. Like, I like that. You know what fucked up Ciampa? When they put the music on him.
No, that did hurt. But I'm talking about in-ring. Like, his in-ring has been tied so closely to Gargano all of his, like, Gargano, on the other hand, can just wrestle anybody. I mean, they call the fucking guy Johnny Wrestling. If you put Gargano in this match with Thatcher, shit probably would have tore it down. Other problem, which is, it's going to be an ongoing theme that I'm going to continue to talk about with this show, is commentary didn't tell this fucking match.
No, that hurt it most, because I think a match between two heavy hitters, and it was so much grappling based, no one called out the grappling maneuvers. It made it feel big. It made it feel important. Moro would have crushed this match.
Yeah.
Like, you look at that, and it's just like, you didn't add anything to the match. The NXT UK crew would have crushed this match. But this, the worst part about tonight's takeover was the commentary. You could drop it a whole grade off of straight commentary alone.
It sucked. The comment, like, we can talk about it now. The commentary team has no chemistry. Like, between Beth Phoenix trying to double ditch her way in there to just say something, and Wade Barrett just kind of heavy-handed with his analysis, but it just doesn't seem like him and Vic have any chemistry. Yeah. And Vic Joseph is good, but it's like, it's just the wrong combination of people, especially to tell some of these stories and matches. Like I said, in the women's War Games match, Wade Barrett was just like confused. Oh, the advantage is, the advantage. And then Beth was like, oh my God. And I'm like, yo, like, you guys are not really selling this match for me. This particular match, I would love to hear Mauro and Nigel McGuinness, like, call this match. Yeah, it would have gave it a sense of urgency, and it wasn't there. You know, Beth, you know how, all right, I'm going to have a little bit of fun with this. Singers, when you have those singers who sing the national anthem and they, like, put riffs and shit that don't need to have riffs, that's like Beth Phoenix's commentary. She gets really excited at spots, and I'm like, that didn't need it there. Like, why are you doing that? Oh, my God, it's a rest hole. Like, Beth, chill out. It's not that fucking fun. And because of that, it feels like somebody's in her headset saying, Beth, you got to say something. Because there are times, either, I said this in the group chat, either I completely tune her out, or she just says nothing of consequence. And then when she says something, I'm like, that came out of nowhere. And nothing that these three do together helped any match tonight. None of these matches felt heightened by the commentary. And I know Mauro can be over the top, but he sells it. Nigel is excellent. I mean, shit, man, get Samoa Joe. Yeah. Corey. Anybody. I mean,
the past 2 weeks on television have been great because you put Kevin Owens in the booth with Vic, and that was good. And then they had another guest commentator last week. So you do this, and it's like, yo, that's the weird thing about Wade Barrett. I don't need Wade Barrett on commentary. I need Bad News Barrett on commentary. He's playing this like a straight guy. Like, he's going there, no charisma, no attitude, no nothing. Like, yo, we don't need that, Wade. We need you to be the asshole heel that you were as a wrestling character. Be that same guy, just on commentary. And then you have a personality, because Vic is cut and dry as it is.
Right.
You don't have to be the straight man. He's the straight man feeding you lines. You call him a clown. You tell him he doesn't know about the business. You tell him that you're Barrett. You got to be that asshole snarky guy. Root for the heels. Right now, he's rooting for no one. He should be, he needs to look at Corey Graves recently, Bobby Heenan back in the day. He has to look at, Jerry the King Lawler. But Lawler and Heenan were great at this because they took their in-ring personas into what they were doing as commentators. Macho Man did the same. Jesse the Body Ventura did the same. They didn't come in and say, yo, I'm just straight lace now. I'm my real person. They took their in-ring character to the booth. And that's why it worked. And he hasn't done that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, because when you think of Wade Barrett, you think of Bad News Barrett, and that's the character that you want in the booth. And even when you look at somebody like Samoa Joe, right, who's great on commentary, but there are times when Samoa does his color and he sides with the heel, or he sides with whoever's the aggressor. Like, Joe, his commentary always sides with the person who is more aggressive, because he doesn't give a shit how you get there, it's how you get the advantage. And you need to have that kind of a personality. You can't have two guys calling it straight. That's why you have a play-by-play and a color. And then Beth. I don't know what the fuck Beth is. Beth is the interjector. I have no idea. I feel bad for Beth. Because I feel like Beth is like a wonderful person, but she just never fits. Like her,
she's
like
lost
more
in the ocean. Like,
yeah, she was dog. She was like Sugar Ray Leonard in the commentary for the Tyson Jones, because Adesanya and Mauro were killing it, and then Sugar Ray would just say some shit, and it would get quiet, and people were like, yo, because you think Sugar Ray is gonna say something that makes sense, and then he just kind of doesn't, and that's what Beth does. I don't know. It hurt this match. Back to this match. This match, people liked it. I did not care for this match, and I don't blame Thatcher. I don't know, man. I don't know what Ciampa's gonna do. He just hasn't.
It wasn't horrible.
It wasn't horrible. No.
It wasn't good. It was good. It was decent.
Like, yeah.
It's what takes the pay-per-view down to an A- for me. This match, particularly. This match I can't defend. And they didn't. The commentary team. All these pay-per-views, you know, you got that one match where you really got to talk up. Like, that's why you have a commentary team. Like, you really got to pull up one of the matches, because not every match could be a banger. Not every match could be a 5-star, 4-star match. And they didn't do it. So, yeah, I mean, they got to fix that. You know what? Now I'm on it. It's all on Wade Barrett. The other two aren't going to change. It's all on Wade Barrett. Like, he's the fucked up part of this. All right, before we go to the next match, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about Dexter Lumis versus Cameron Grimes when we return. You guys stay right there. All right, we'll get back to the show in a second, but first, 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical, and Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site, according to Comscore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts.
And now Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. 73% of online job seekers in the U.S. visit Indeed each month, according to Comscore. So it's clear Indeed can help get you the quality hire you need. That's why more than 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, just that quick, we are back. And then into the next match, Dexter Lumis versus Cameron Grimes in a strap match. oh, man. Shout out to Sean. 123 Kid, a.k.a. X-Pac. He said this was the best strap match he's seen. And it was innovative, right? They did some new shit, which is hard to do in 2020. But to me, it definitely wasn't the best. Shout out to Twitter, who's immediately started calling out Sting versus Vader as the best strap match ever. And then even Royal Rumble this past year, The Fiend and Daniel Bryan crushed that shit. It was the best match The Fiend has had in that character. Credit to Daniel Bryan, who's just fucking amazing. But I think this match brought something different. And even though Cameron Grimes ends up losing, to me, he's the star of this match, not Dexter Lumis.
Oh, of course. One, surprise Cameron Grimes lost. You picked Lumis to win, but I felt like Grimes, like, give him a bone, man. But I guess whatever. But yeah. The bump on the chair towards the end was ridiculous. There were some nasty bumps in this pay-per-view. Well, network special. Again, I don't know what the fuck we're calling these things. I'm going to call them pay-per-views. You guys are just going to deal with it. But Grimes, like, his cowardly heel act works so damn good. And he finds his spots to get his offense in. And it's good. And he bumps well. And, like, there, I know some people rolled their eyes because I was like, it's time for to give Cameron Grimes a push. Like, I want to see him with the North American title. Yeah. I feel like that's the perfect spot for him. Dexter Lumis, although it's cool, but I feel like he's a better version of the Boogeyman. Remember the Boogeyman?
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
There's only so far you can get with that character. And which is fine. Everybody has a place, and Lumis has a place. I love the pictures. I think he's got a great place, but I think there's so he's much more as a camera. Yeah. Cameron Grimes has so much more to layers to his character. Yeah. And again, I still hate the top hat, but it just makes the shit work. So for a strap match, this was really good. When I think of strap matches, for whatever reason, yes, Sting and Vader Duke does come to mind, and you talk about Brian and the Fiend, but I always think about Savio Vega and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Ooh. When they had their beef. That's a strap match that always comes. Like, it was the strap match, like the four corners. We had to touch all four corners to win.
Four corners, yeah. That was always the best one. Cena had a good one. Was that Cena Rusev?
I don't remember.
I think all I remember Cena is Rusev. I don't. All four corners, man. All I remember is Cena not putting Rusev over at WrestleMania. I don't know if it's Cena's fault. I'm just going to blame him.
No, Cena anyway. Also won the strap match, the four-quarter strap.
Yeah, he wins everything. Yeah, no. LOL, yeah, Cena wins. Rusev.
But Rusev did the accolade with the fucking strap, and it was crazy.
Yeah.
It was a good match.
This match was better than it had any business being, and that's all because of Cameron Grimes. And it was fun because of what the things that Cameron Grimes does. And they got to keep utilizing this man because – he's fucking good.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that no matter how much he loses, he can be just an asshole and talk himself right back into the picture.
Yeah.
So he's always going to make the other guy look like $1 million, and then sooner or later, he's going to look like $1 million. And I agree. I think he should have a run with the North American title. Kind of like Johnny Gargano is now.
Yeah.
Right? Like, heel Johnny Gargano is being heel and asshole-ish with the North American title, and it works. I think Cameron Grimes could be in that same mold going forward. And Dexter Lumis, I don't know. He's a guy who will work well on the main roster. I don't think they really cut him. I think he's similar to Elias, where he gives you a funny 6-minute segment or backstage interview on Raw every week. And then you're just like, okay, that's what he's there for. Cool. Like, that's what he does. I don't know if he ever holds a title, but he gets a check. That's all that matters. Next match, Johnny Gargano versus Damian Priest versus the champ, Leon Ruff. Let me not mess up his name. Damn. And then triple threat match for the NXT North American Championship. I thought this was a very good build into this match. It was funny. The roulette wheels hate Johnny Gargano. He thought Leon Ruff was going to be an easy go at it. And then every time Damian Priest ends up helping Leon Ruff either win the title or maintain the title. I thought it was a good way to play and extend the feud between Gargano and Damian Priest.
Dude, this was the match I was most concerned about. Because I was like, well, how are we going to make this work with Leon Ruff? As, you know, obviously, those who haven't watched it, Johnny Gargano gets the NXT title, gets a little help from who I thought was like, oh shit, Retribution. No, it wasn't. It was Austin Theory and probably the lackeys that Retribution didn't bring with him to Raw to help him get the finish. Pins Damian Priest. No, pins Leon Ruff, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Pins Ruff. Regains the title. I was concerned because I was like, well, how are they going to do this match and make Ruff feel like a force rather than a guy who kind of sneaks his spots in? And they did a really good job because the story between Priest and Ruff was played extremely well. There was so many spots where Priest was like, dude, go away. Like, let me handle this. And Ruff was like, I ain't no bitch. I'm going to try to get this offense in, and then you're going to fuck me up. And that's what continued to happen throughout the match. Gargano, again, I can't say enough good things about how well this man has turned into a heel. I was so concerned that it wouldn't work originally. But his work in this match, he would, like, there was a spot where he was going to lawn dart Leon Ruff into the opposite corner. And then he looked And then he saw Priest sitting there, and he was like, this makes sense. And he lawn darted Ruff into Priest, and he had like this wicked smile on his face. And I was like, that's how you play as a heel. Everything Gargano did worked in this match. Everything Ruff did worked in this match. The spot where he got demolished by Priest and then came back and springboarded back into the ring was incredible. Like, this match, I enjoyed the hell out of this match because they found a way to make the story work without Ruff looking like a weak link, telling another story with Priest and Ruff, and then Gargano overcoming all the bullshit. Because at a certain point, I said on Twitter, I was like, Ruff is going to pin Priest, isn't he? The way this was playing out, this is what I started to think. But no, Gargano gets the title. I hope this is not the end for Ruff. I have no idea how you continue this with him, because him stealing wins can only get him so far. But he's a fun character. He's a good underdog. There's a lot of things that work here. Gargano's great. We find out it's Austin Theory. We knew he was going to come back at some point. The kid, he's 21? He's got a ton of potential.
Yeah, he's like 21.
Yeah, he's got amazing potential. I don't know who the rest of the Ghostface guys are. I guess we'll figure that out at some point. It makes me wonder.
Is it just hired hands.
Obviously, the news just broke that Candice LeRae seems like she may have broke her arm, which really sucks. Yeah. But that means she can work Indy Hartwell's corner, right? So it makes me wonder, is this Candice, Indy, India, Gargano, and Theory, are they like a faction now?
I think for like a hot second, and then we see Austin Theory sour on Gargano. I think that's the next play we get, is Theory probably versus Priest, but Gargano helping him against Priest and helping him get over, and then Austin Theory eventually sours on Gargano.
So I'm in no hurry to turn Gargano babyface. And I think...
No, but Austin Theory is a heel through and through.
He is.
I think he is the future of NXT. So they are going to slow play this probably for the next like 3 years. I mean, the kid's 21. But, I mean, in the next 3 years, he is going to be champion. He is going to reign over NXT. And I think pairing him with Gargano to learn the ropes and then eventually turn on Gargano would be a very smart play. So I like what they're doing with Austin Theory, especially a reset after the fucking main roster fiasco.
Yeah, Theory has a ton of promise. I don't know what's going on outside of the ring with him. That's what kind of had him disappear for a little while. Something was going on. Seth Rollins, when I interviewed him, he had said it. So I don't know if that'll eventually hold him back. But he's got a ton of potential. He's got a great look. He can wrestle. He can work. And being paired with Gargano is a good thing. He needs to get back on a winning streak. He kind of fell off with a losing streak. Smart. This is well played. But all in all, this match was well done. And Gargano is... Does Gargano miss? Does Gargano have a bad match? Ever?
No. Ever. No.
So like, is he like... Is he the Daniel Bryan NXT?
Oh, easily. Okay. Easily. Like, you can put him anywhere, and he's pulling the best out of everyone. I'm not sure if Gargano ever goes to the main roster. You want to talk about lifers. I think he becomes the first NXT lifer. Where he doesn't leave.
He really shouldn't.
I mean, people would argue that he needs a WrestleMania moment. The only reason he would go to the main roster is immediately filling the Daniel Bryan void and going into like a title program and getting pushed. And, you know, you spend 10 years in NXT and then you go and be like, yo, this guy has to win the belt. He's on the big stage and you play the super underdog role. Yeah. But outside of that, he's found a way to reinvent himself. He can always stay fresh. You can do DIY again in a year if you want to, because the tag team division is thin outside of Ever-Rise. There is so much promise there that I can't wait. Can't wait to see what's next for Gargano. But every match is fucking good. Him and Austin Theory would kill it if they had a match. Putting the belt on him, whoever you want to put in front of him next, he's going to crush it. And I look forward for his next, like, real singles match. It's been a while since they gave him an opponent to be like, yo, go have a banger.
Right.
So I look forward to that. Maybe they, I don't know if they are waiting for crowds or whatever, but like you said, we haven't seen that 4.5, 5-star match in a second. And I feel like they have a couple in their hands, and for some reason they're just holding them.
Well, they got into that strange spot. Like, they went from Cole delivering all the time, and then they had Lee go over Cole, and then for whatever reason, the Lee-Cross fight match just wasn't good. Then Cross got hurt. And now, so it's like we haven't had the corner piece of every banger has been pretty much Gargano and or Cole. They got to figure out a way to get back to that, because that's yeah, where the bangers are.
That's true. I feel like every one. I mean, the women have had a couple that are just fucking nuts.
Yeah, but I mean, the
Io Shirai. Yeah, like,
yeah, but the one consistency is like Gargano is, yeah, Gargano Cole, Gargano Ciampa, like Gargano Andrade. Like, yep. If you run down the list of DIY matches.
DIY, yeah. Just every 5-star match, just like Gargano, Gargano.
Like, he is NXT. I know that we talk about Finn Balor, and Finn Balor is like, I am NXT. No, it's Gargano.
No. Johnny Gargano is NXT. And Adam Cole has been great. I mean, Sami Zayn before them, the heart of NXT, right? Like, Sami was great. There's been no one like Johnny Gargano. He's the most underrated wrestler in the world. And I say that with every 5-star match he has earned, every 4.5-star match he has earned, he is still the most underrated wrestler in the world. To not be PWI number one twice, 3 times by now is a shame.
He's definitely up there.
He's up there. He's just never the guy. I feel like one of these years he can definitely push through. And he'll get the main title back again too. Like, he's one of those guys where if you're in flux, and which I'm surprised they haven't done it now, but they put the North American title on him. But if you're in flux and like people keep getting injured, just put it on Johnny Gargano, and it's going to be a fucking great title reign. So I think he's the most consistent. Let's take a break before we get into this main event, though. When we come back, we are talking the main event of War Games, Undisputed Era versus Team Pat McAfee. And seeing where that goes. You guys stay tuned. We'll be right back. We'll get right back to the show in a second. But first, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be able to be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads to totals to teams, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day.
Head to Bet Online today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, we are back from that break, and it's time to talk about the main event. Undisputed Era, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Roderick Strong, and Bobby Fish versus Pat McAfee, Pete Dunne, Danny Burch, and Oney Lorcan. Damn, Pete Dunne looks great.
Yeah.
I talked about this the last segment. They have these 5-star matches in their hands that they're just fucking holding on to. Him versus Kyle O'Reilly is that 5-star match just waiting to be just unleashed into the world. And they worked their asses off with each other in this match. And there's something still there, right? Like, they teased it. I feel like this isn't done between those two.
No, man. Yeah, first of all, I keep talking about this every week. Pete Dunne's attire is going to need to change. Because it don't even look right on him anymore because he's so ripped. The man looks
like the Bruiserweight gear.
Dude, yeah. His COVID diet, like, has been unbelievable. That body transformation is nuts. Like, that onesie he's wearing, nah, man, you don't need that anymore. He's... It looks weird now.
He goes shirtless like Roman Reigns.
Yeah, like he's ripped. Like the dude is ripped. He's svelte. He's thinner, clearly cut. Yeah. He doesn't need the onesie anymore. Like, you don't need that same.
Keep the onesie, go full Jason Jordan, and just start letting the straps down when you wild out.
that. He looks incredible. But clearly, as soon as they started this match with him and O'Reilly, I was like, all right, this is a banger. So, again, this is another match. Had a fantastic finish. But as I'm watching this match, I'm going, on paper, this should be a fucking blowout. This shouldn't be, like, with the exception of Dunn, they, like, Lorcan and Burch, this ain't it, man. I'm sorry. As much as we
try. They're dropping the tag team titles next week.
They have to, man. They just don't, like, they were a prop in this match. And they're not even bad wrestlers. It just came out of nowhere. And it was like, all right, they're heels, and they don't really do anything. Like, they could have gotten, like, the Grizzled Young Veterans, and I would have been like, cool, okay, that makes sense. Right? Like, I could have saw that, and I was like, cool. But they didn't. They could have even went with Mustache Mountain. I would have been like, all right. But Burch and Larkin? Nah. Nah. They're not
heels. They don't work as heels. They never worked as heels until this angle. And they've always been the underdogs. They couldn't get the belts. And then you would think that would lead to, okay, they finally cheated to get the belts and they should be heels. But they still don't feel like heels. No. Only Larkin's not a heel. Biff Busick, I guess, was at some point, but not in like NXT. Like, he's always the hardworking guy who's just gonna bust ass, and you want him to succeed. He finally gets a title, but it's like, yeah, you guys don't do heelish shit at all. No, it doesn't work. It
doesn't work. So the match itself, like the final stretch of this match, was incredible. There were some great spots, but we got to talk about Pat McAfee. This motherfucker spent the entire match like selling his ass off, and just. Swanton moonsault, like his moonsault would give Kurt Angle's moonsault fits. The form on that shit was
athletic, yo. Incredible.
This motherfucker was a punter.
That's how crazy it is, though, right? Like, you look at the NFL, you'd be like, yo, punters and kickers, ha ha ha. These motherfuckers are still like top 1% athletes to be punters and kickers. The flexibility it takes to be a punter is insane. But these are things you don't think about on the daily. So when Pat McAfee is like, nah, I was the elite athletic punter that there is. And he's like, yo, watch this. They're like, yo, this is how the form is supposed to look like on a Swanton dive. He watches like three, four minutes of Jeff Hardy Swanton dive clips. He's like, got it. And then he went tonight and did the full fucking layout, like hands out, guns out, Swanton dive. From the top of the cage, they didn't even catch him. From the top of the cage. He took a perfect back bump.
Yeah, they were like, let's see if he knows how to take a back bump. Everybody moves.
This motherfucker was incredible.
Yes.
If he wanted to wrestle, there's no reason he has to wrestle, right? Like, none. His show is wildly successful. He talks about all sports, like him or not. Like, he's found his lane. Like, I don't like Jim Rome as a show. Like, I don't like that real like asshole-ish heel persona on radio, but I feel like that's what Pat McAfee is, and it works. So his following is crazy. He doesn't have to be a pro wrestler, but in terms of like, I was very skeptical of like, why do you need Pat McAfee and all this stuff? He's been great on the mic, which shouldn't be surprising. He talks for a living, and then in ring, it's like, yo, this guy is good, and he cares to be good.
Yeah.
This match was great. I wanted to see him hit the Panama Sunrise spot. Because I was like, yo, I think he can do this.
Yeah, he can do it. Except he tried it from like 30 yards out and got super kicked. I was like, dude, come on. Well, yeah. It's only, I was like, that's so stupid. So honestly,
I thought he could make the jump. Like, he was up there and I was like, yo, he's mad far. But I think he could get there.
I would like to see him. I would love to see him dedicate himself to this. He's a good douchebag that I don't want him on my TV. But I want him on my TV. Like, I watch him. I'm like, he's a good heel. I'm curious as to how well he could actually work. Because most of his work is jumping off of shit and taking bumps, right? That's
Shane early... McMahon made a career out of this, man. Shane McMahon has a full career in the ring off of that.
And Shane, like, before this takeover started, for whatever reason, I felt like watching The Untold between Shane McMahon and Kurt Angle when Kurt tried to kill Shane. In the King of the Ring match when he kept trying to throw him through the glass and Shane kept landing on his fucking head. That's what I think of Pat McAfee. I was like, he'd probably do the same shit. Just keep landing on his head and just like throw me again. But this match was fun for that. There's a few things in the match where I was just like, oh, yeah, Pete Dunne is the guy. Like every time I sat there and watched, I was like, yeah, I mean, all this shit is cool, but Pete Dunne and Adam Cole have a banger in them, and Pete Dunne and Kyle O'Reilly have a banger in them. Sorry, Roderick, and sorry, Bobby Fish, you're left out of this one. these are the matches to make. And one of them has to be on New Year's Evil. It has to. I don't know which one, but it has to. So the question is, Undisputed Era win. An excellent sequence down the final stretch. Who got pinned? Lorcan or Burch? They protected McAfee.
No, which yeah, it was Burch got pinned.
Okay.
After eating the knee to the face. With Kyle the chair.
Yeah, they fucked him up. But Undisputed Era
that
wins.
Tag team spot was incredible, by the way. Like the way they changed that, chained everything together, it was so fast and so clean. I was like, fuck, this is good tag team wrestling.
Yeah. So Undisputed Era wins. They close the show. No swerve. No post credit. None of that shit. They just win. Nope. Where do we go from here now that we've wrapped this match up? One, I thought this match was really good. I saw people calling it 5-star. I don't think it was a 5-star. No, but I thought it was really, really good.
I don't know if you can have a 5-star War Games match.
Yeah, it's like, just too much
just
time.
To be honest. Like, yeah, it's too much time to fill. Like, no.
Yeah, it's like having a 5-star Royal Rumble match. No, it's too fucking long.
No, it could be good, but no, it's not 5-star.
Right. So now where do we go from here? I don't know where Pat McAfee goes from here.
He goes back to his day job. But thank you, Pat McAfee. And maybe in a year, or maybe in a couple months, we call you for the main roster and you make a WrestleMania appearance.
Very possible. So if that's what happens and McAfee's gone, that means Burch and Lorcan are on their own, which means, like you said, drop the titles.
Yep.
Dunn obviously needs to be in an angle with either Cole or O'Reilly immediately. He's too good for this. Now, we also know they did a spot where Karrion Kross is clearly coming back on Wednesday. I fully expect him to attack Finn Balor. And that means the title is back into play. It's been a strange 2 months where we have had no... Honestly, we haven't really had any NXT title action for almost like 4 months.
Yeah, between since Keith Lee bounced in August.
Yeah, it's like since that, he lost, Karrion got hurt. Balor, they did the little like it hasn't really been like a real champion to do anything in a while. So now we're gonna have Balor involved, and Kross has to come after Balor. It can't go any other way. But what happens to the Undisputed Era in general? Some people were like, "Well, this is their sign off," and I was like, "No, I think that they are also to me NXT lifers."
Not Cole.
You can't separate Cole from the Undisputed Era and expect it to work on Raw or SmackDown. Vince will be like, he's
Cole
too small.
I think Cole goes by himself.
No.
And Kyle O'Reilly becomes the top of the Undisputed Era.
No. You can't do that.
I'm just telling you. I mean, I'm just telling you how it. Or they don't move up. But I mean, I think eventually Cole is going to the main roster, whether it's good or not. Sink or swim, I think Cole is the guy making the jump. I would love to see them all go, but I have no faith in that. Vince doesn't give a fuck about tag team wrestling, so I don't know.
It's all or nothing. There's no way that you pull Cole out of that group to just take him to the main roster and he just goes there to basically die. Because it doesn't make any sense. Like, I could see Undisputed Era eventually getting called up if the main roster, Raw and SmackDown were able to figure out the bullshit they have going on now. Because they put all the energy into Retribution. That shit went nowhere. Nope. I hate to see the Undisputed Era get caught in that bullshit, which is why I would like for them to stay on NXT. And if you separate Cole, there's so many guys on that roster. I just don't know where they immediately fit them in. So I thought, and I kind of hope this still happens. Because I know, like, knowing how the WWE works, when things are good for too long, they're going to eventually separate. The babyface turn was to refresh the Undisputed Era. They felt like the heel was getting stale. I disagree, but that's what they felt. And they turned them babyface. But the next step in this is the step that I talked about before. Kyle has to separate from that group. It ain't Cole. It's Kyle. Because I don't want to say he's being held back. Because Cole's such a big, you know, star, and he looks like the guy of the Undisputed Era, but he's got so much more to give as a singles competitor.
Yep.
And I don't know if we'll get it.
The pin.
What you say?
He picked up the pin tonight, and he picked up the win. And I think they've been pushing him as his own guy.
Yeah, like I feel like it's weird now because I felt like I said before, I thought they would have gotten like Kyle would have beefed with the Undisputed Era as heels, but now that they're baby faces, I can't see how you separate them. I don't know. I don't know, man. No, I don't know where this all goes.
Just gotta let him chase. I don't know. I would love to see Kyle O'Reilly versus Johnny Gargano as a program.
Dude, there is not a pro. For a lot of people who didn't watch Kyle on the indie scene, there's nothing that Kyle can't do. He is truthfully one of the best singles wrestlers with a unique style that's kind of caught in between Zack Sabre Jr., Thatcher, but then he can bang like a lot of the other guys as well. He can do everything really well, but either he was tied to Red Dragon, or for here, he's been tied to Undisputed Era, where he hasn't really had an opportunity to show his singles chops. It needs to happen. He's too good not to. Yeah. Anybody seen him as a single star, he knows he's an excellent wrestler. I don't know how you pull this off.
There. The personality is there now, too.
It's always like been there. They just haven't showcased funny. It.
Yeah, he's honestly, and he's still young in wrestling years, but he is what they signed Kenta to be. Like, style-wise, he's Kenta. Everything you wanted from him. He's the technician. He can bang. He's smaller, but he can bang with the best of them. He has all those attributes, but he has the personality that Kenta really never absorbed and was never able to bring out. So I think you can push Kyle O'Reilly as far as you want to push him without really taking away from Adam Cole. Like, Adam Cole doesn't need anything right now. Adam Cole is golden. Whatever feud you put him in, he's great. And they just had him work with fucking Pat McAfee. And when it comes to putting butts in the seats, if your top guy's job is to put butts in the seats, Adam Cole is still the top guy in NXT. So even though you don't have to have the title to be the top guy in your promotion, he still puts butts in the seats. And this was proof of that. So, I mean, I don't know where they go with it. Maybe they move up. They've had one hell of a run in NXT. There's no shame in trying your hand at the main roster.
Yeah, there is.
I mean,
yes, no, there is.
80% fail. But if you could be the 20% that does it, fuck it. Take your try.
Yeah, no thanks.
What is it? Like, if you flame out after 3 years, you hit the indies again and you're fucking kings, you're made men, you're making crazy amounts of money, or they move you back to NXT. I'm a firm believer in flaming out on the main roster doesn't hurt your career. It's wasted time. Maybe you think you should have been better. They don't use you well, which is all true. But whatever you do after that, you're still a made man. Like, it doesn't, you don't take a step back.
Yes, you
go somewhere else after the main roster. Where? The Good Brothers went to Impact and became champions in 3 days. They're hosting Talk Is Shop-a-Mania. They're making money. What did it cost them to go from New Japan for 5 years to the main roster? Never, you know, get a couple title reigns, all this stuff, but never really be the guys that they could have been or should have been. They got in better shape. It still didn't help them get the push. And then they went right back. If they never went to the main roster, they would have still been in New Japan. So it's not like they lost their spot in New Japan. When the Rona's gone and they get to go back, they'll probably win those titles too. And then they're Impact champions. Like, it didn't cost them anything.
It cost them time.
They made money.
It cost them time.
It cost them time. But they went back and got huge contracts. And they went to the WWE and had huge contracts. So what? They made money.
They never went to NXT. So that's a bad example. NXT.
But they went to the main roster. Okay, let's say someone who goes up through NXT and then gets released. I don't know.
Go ahead, Ricochet.
Moxley is not good. He hasn't been released.
Well, let's just say
hit the indies. He's right back in New Japan and he's huge.
Is he huge?
Yes. I'll give you this. Pac went straight through NXT to the main roster. That didn't work. They put him on 205 Live, left, went to NXT and was huge. Or excuse me, went to AEW and was huge.
Huge?
He's a top card guy for them. Yes.
Here's what I'm saying.
Dope.
Here's what I'm saying.
It didn't cost him anything.
It costs you time, and time is important. Listen, I get it. Some of these guys that go from, like, when you leave the WWE, you're a hot commodity. But here's the part that you're missing. You're a hot commodity when AEW was brand new. When AEW's brand new was putting bodies in there, you're a hot commodity. 3 years from now, I don't think AEW's chasing everything that WWE doesn't have anymore. Because it's evident right now, AEW's not chasing everybody that gets released from WWE. So if guys like Cole O'Reilly, you know, Kyle, like if the Undisputed Era get called up and just flame out, like think about it. Dominik Dijakovic is in a tough spot right now. Because
oh yeah, he's in arguably the worst spot possible.
But this is what's going to start happening, because nobody's just going to be like, oh, you worked WWE, come to AEW, because that's the number one competitor, come to Impact. It's not going to be like that anymore. Everybody's not going to be throwing money like this anymore. The boom is going to slow down. And if you get caught up, like some guys get a bump from NXT to the main roster and don't make a ton of money. Nothing really changes. Yeah. Especially now, because you're not on the road. You're wherever you're at is where you're at, right? Like if you're doing NXT weekly, you're not traveling. Thunderdome, you're not traveling. You're just doing those shows at the Thunderdome. So, but if you were to lose 3 years of your career doing basically nothing on the main roster, and then you hit the indie scene, there's no guarantee that you're a big star. You just wasted years.
If you were good before you left, you're not going to come back to a lesser position. I understand if you're like a guy and you really haven't made your mark, you haven't cut your teeth, and then you go and you fail, then yeah, okay, I get it. But if you were somebody before you left the indies and you were big time signing and then you go back, you're fine. Like EC3 didn't go back to a lesser position or lesser money than he left.
No, but you said back to more. You said trying your hand. You don't lose anything, but you lose momentum. Like ask
people were hype as fuck for EC3 to go back wherever he signed.
Dude,
what momentum did he lose?
Dude, how many years did he do nothing?
That's fair, but if you stay in your promotion, you can only be champion so long. You're going up, you're going down, you're going up, you're going down. Okay, but you stay maybe an upper mid-card guy, main event style guy for those 3 years. You get paid whatever you get paid, maybe a little bit more every year. Going to the WWE, you got paid more or arguably the same. You did your thing, it flamed out, you went back to the company you were at. They got to pay you more now.
Do they?
And then...
Are you sure about that?
I don't know.
Here's an example. Leo Rush. You think he's getting paid a lot more? ACH. Think he's getting paid a lot more?
I'd say ACH is getting paid around the same, but ACH had weird circumstances, so no.
Brian Myers. I mean, there's no guarantee.
Brian Myers. Brian Myers, was he a big indie guy?
No, but that's... All I'm saying
is... what I'm saying. If you leave there with a name, you can go back to the name you had. That's all I'm saying. You're never going to take a step back by flaming out in the WWE and then going back if you are a primetime guy. Samoa Joe can leave tomorrow and go back and be fine.
Well, I just don't know what fine means. What I'm saying is you go to the main roster. You lose 3 years of your career, right? You get older. You may not be able to do the same things that you could. Every wrestler, especially when you talk to wrestlers, all wrestlers are, they lean heavily on their visibility and their ability to work. The market is hot because of AEW right now, but you can't guarantee it's going to be there 3 years from now. Because there's a lot of, you know, not everybody's going to be guaranteed a spot just based off of their time with WWE. They'd be better off, depending on how the money is, working the indie circuit. Or, in the case of Undisputed Era, just staying in NXT. I know this for a fact. There are guys who don't want to leave NXT because they know what's about to happen. They have no interest in doing that.
No, yeah. I mean, that's very true. I can see that. But I'm not saying that everyone should. But it's okay to make a calculated risk and say, I think I can survive there.
It's not their decision at the end of the day. No, none of those guys get to say, hey, I want to get called up. It don't work like that.
Yeah. No, but I mean, if, like, say you get called up, right? It's okay to be like, you know what? I think I can buck the trend. Like, we can all stay in our cushy-ass jobs now. But if someone comes to knock and it's like, okay, do I want to stay here doing this, or do I want to take the chance and jump and be great, knowing that if I flame out at this, I'm fucking jobless. But being at a lower, not a lower level, but being where I am and being comfortable offers me security. But every now and then, security ain't what it's cracked up to be.
Shit.
And I think I think Adam Cole can take the jump. Yeah. It's not. It's not like, listen, security is great and NXT is great and all this shit. And I understand, like, going up and flaming out fucking sucks. But if you can go up and you can become Seth Rollins, you're pretty much all right. Like, you're, that's well worth the gamble. I don't think Seth Rollins regrets anything.
I mean, that's
right. Seth, like, Rollins. If you can go up and be, exactly. I'm not saying that happens to everyone, but if you take the shot and be like, you know what, I'm going to try to be Seth Rollins. I'm going to try to be Roman Reigns. At this point, I'm going to try to be Drew McIntyre, who went up and was like, you know what, you kind of figured out. But for every one of those, there's a ton more Apollo Crews and Andrade Cien Almas, who should have been a fucking star but isn't. Nakamura, who's been at the top of cards but really hasn't hit his potential. Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, like, these guys should be mega stars, and they're not.
No, there's just...
But they've done pretty damn good.
You know what it boils down to is what I've said about the show years on the show years ago. There ain't enough spots. You can only have so many first basemen. Now, you pack the Yankees with, like, if you guys go and sign Abreu and, you know, you go sign everybody. Like, you get everybody. Goldschmidt. You can only play so many guys at first base. There's Seth Rollins. Ain't nobody taking Seth Rollins' spot right now. No, that's what a lot of people don't realize. It's like the main roster has slots for guys at certain spots. And you bring in people from NXT, they can't fit in those spots because they don't exist. Which is crazy when you think you have a 3-hour show on Monday and a 2-hour show on Friday and you still don't have enough room. But yet...
Because, I mean, Randy Orton still has his spot. That slot has been filled for 18 years.
And it's never going to go away. He's a legend. So in terms of Adam Cole, like, trying to be Seth Rollins, the first thing Vince is going to say is too short. That's the first thing he's going to say. And then he's going to say, I already got Daniel Bryan. Because you saw Gargano and Ciampa came to the main roster for, like, what, a week? There was nothing there for him.
No, I'm out of here. I'm out of here.
They sent him back. It wasn't their decision. They just got sent back. And they were lucky to be sent back. Andrade was a guy that Paul Heyman loved. As soon as Paul Heyman was moved off of Raw, it was over.
Yep. I mean, shit, you can end up Shorty G tomorrow.
Hey, American Alpha, hottest tag team in NXT. Cold world. Rap.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of out of their control, but yeah, still, Chad Gable's getting wasted.
Yeah, definitely. So it's like, guys want to work. No guy wants to sit there and do nothing. So that's all I'm saying is, like, no, these guys don't want to get called up and be hot for a month and then be benched for 2 years. Retribution is over. It's a wrap. We haven't even talked about the main roster in 2 weeks because nothing has happened. But Retribution continues to eat pins. Mia Yim lost to Dana Brooke. Are you kidding me?
It's over. It's over. You lose to Dana Brooke, it's over.
It's a wrap.
Yeah, no, it's a cold world, man. Cold world out there. I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully, we get plenty more Undisputed Era in NXT, and we don't got to worry about that for some time. But yeah, you know, when people get called up, you just cross your fingers and pray for the best. Close your eyes. And it's going to be like that until Vince is no longer in charge, and then it could get drastically worse or it could get a little bit better. Those are the two options. It could get drastically worse or a tad bit better. It's not going to get drastically better. The machine is the machine, right? So we'll see how it goes. We'll see how everything shakes out. That's our recap for NXT TakeOver War Games, though. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Immediate recap. Like I said earlier, later on this week, around Tuesday or Wednesday, we'll be putting out our boxing show, which will have music talk to start out. We'll talk Floyd Mayweather coming back for an exhibition. We'll talk Errol Spence. And we'll preview the Anthony Joshua fight that's coming up this weekend. We appreciate you guys for listening, as always. Hopefully you guys are out there staying safe, staying Rona-free. That shit is everywhere. Make sure you guys take care of yourself, please. In the meantime, follow us on social media at @CornerPodcast_ at @CornerClubForLife on Instagram. You can follow me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hell on all platforms. Shout out to the network, Blue Wire. Shout out to the sponsors. You guys keep the lights on. We appreciate you. Until next week, stay safe. We're out.
Peace.